poison center funding, sex can kill ya, school nurse medication errors, and we're going to take a look at cholesterol-lowering drugs today. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the program this week. We've got a good show coming up for you here, but before we get into that, I do want to remind you, all of the information discussed in this episode is available for you with links to additional resources, the original news items, or whatever the case may be, all over at nursingshow.com. There's a show notes link right at the top of the page, and you can go ahead and just click on that link, find the episode you're looking for, and you'll find all of the links and information to follow up on this show and every other episode over at nursingshow.com. If you are also over there, you can check out and sign up for our email newsletter, get all those links sent directly to you every week when an episode is released. You can also, of course, follow us on Facebook and Twitter and other things, all via the page. And there are a lot of other articles and information posted throughout the course of each week, all over at the nursingshow.com site. If you'd like to get back in touch with me by email, you can certainly do that. I love to hear from you, and I try very hard to respond back to every email I get. So go ahead and shoot me an email to nursingshow@gmail.com. You can also reach me by Twitter or Facebook, one of those type of options, and you can find me there under the handle PodMedic. So twitter.com/PodMedic and facebook.com/PodMedic will get you there. You can also, of course, become a fan of the Nursing Show fan page on Facebook, and that's available at facebook.com/nursingshow. Let's jump on into the news here in just a sec, and we'll get on to the news segments. But I do want to remind you to continue to support our sponsors. That's what keeps The Nursing Show coming to you for free each week. And I would urge you to follow up. Just visit our sponsor sites. Spend 2 minutes of your day once in a while checking out some of the sponsors here at The Nursing Show. We appreciate it. They appreciate it. And they'll continue to send their sponsorship support here to The Nursing Show. And we can keep The Nursing Show coming to you here each week. That's it. Let's jump into the news. Time now for this week's news, and let's go ahead and start off with an article that's very concerning to me, and you'll understand why in a second. The federal government is looking at cutting almost all funding for their National Poison Center funding across the country. So all of the regional and state poison centers would lose whatever percentage of federal funding they receive, and it would cause many of them to close. This is alarming to those of us that are looking at the poison centers and using them as a resource. Poison centers across the country receive 12,000 calls every day on poison-related issues. This can be poisoning calls from individuals in the consumer marketplace, our patients out there calling, using the poison center as a resource rather than the emergency department, saving a lot of dollars and resources there. Also, a lot of healthcare professionals, hospitals, physicians, and others call poison centers on a regular basis, utilizing them as a resource when they have a patient who is presenting with a potential poisoning or overdose. Poison centers are a great resource, and there's a lot of impetus to take all that money and use a fraction of it to open a national poison center in one location. Now, this seems to make sense on the face of it. However, I would caution you that, especially for, I know in my area, the Maryland Poison Center and the Washington, D.C. metro area Poison Center are very active in educating in and around the communities here, both among the public and among healthcare professionals. Hospitals, physicians and nurses, EMS services all get a lot of educational resources and support from poison centers, and that would go away as well. And that's one of the reasons why there needs to be this local support. There needs to be a way for the system to continue to have that locally available resource, either for local poison center resources, for medical professionals, as well as the resources for the consumers themselves. Remember that poison centers, about 78% of the calls into a poison center, depending on which center you're in, those numbers might vary, but they're all up there in the 70s. I know Maryland Poison Center says 78% of their calls do not result in a trip to the emergency department or even a call to 911. That means that those are resources that are now available to treat other patients that are coming in and potentially more sick, all because they go and call a poison center, and that poison center enables those patients to get the resources they need from the poison center call and find out that this isn't that serious, it's not toxic, it's not seriously toxic, you can monitor for this, and poison centers are really great at giving that kind of telenursing experience. In fact, I know in the Maryland area, many of the people are nurses in the Maryland Poison Center lines, or they are pharmacists. So either case, we have highly trained professionals dealing with medical and toxicology issues. So it's certainly a good option, and I'd like to see some of that funding continue. So reach out to the federal government, talk to your legislators, and tell them not to go ahead and cut poison center funding, because cutting the funding, $27 million, I think, nationwide, is going to cause poison centers across the country, in some cases, many of them, to shut down or cut back on resources, and that means that those people are going to have to go to the emergency department, which will end up costing the federal government a whole lot more money than the $27 million or so that they want to spend or could be spending there now. So check it out. I look forward to your comments. What do you think of your local poison center? Have you used them as a resource? Do you think that this funding, that a single national call center would work? I'd like to hear your resources, ideas on this. I think this is open to discussion. So check back in with me. You can get in touch with me here at nursingshow@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment right on this particular episode show notes and start a discussion among the other listeners here on The Nursing Show. Let's check into our next story. This one's kind of provocative, and I think probably a lot of you that saw this probably at least clicked on the article. You know, we talk about how we can change lifestyle for our patients, how we can adjust some of the things that we need to adjust to help our patients, and ourselves in some cases, change our lifestyles and become more active, more healthy. And what do you do if you find out your patients come to you and say, well, I just saw an article that says exercise, even something as simple as sex, can cause me to have a cardiac arrest? Well, what do you do? So exercise will kill you, not exercising will kill you too. So what do we do? We need to, of course, look at these articles. The particular study just basically found that there is an increased risk for a very short period of time, up to about 2 hours at tops, after any kind of physical activity, including sexual activity or any kind of exercise, that the person is at increased risk for cardiac arrest based on those numbers. Now, if you increased and had a group of 10,000 people and all of them exercised, there would be an increase of about two to three additional people per year out of 10,000 that would have a cardiac arrest related to the exercise event. Not a huge number, and the article goes on to point out that people who are regularly exercising significantly cut their risk for cardiovascular disease, so that their numbers would fall well below. Even though the exercise event does put them temporarily at increased risk, they would fall into another category where they are regularly exercising, and that effect on their body is much lessened because of the fact that they're used to strenuous events and activity. So this is something we need to educate people on. Of course, you can go out there and say sex kills if you want to be provocative about this. But I think that one of the things that this article does point out is that there are different ways. Maybe we can tell people, look, sex can kill you, but you can actually, if you exercise regularly, you can make sex safer. Maybe we can encourage them to be more active by encouraging them to focus on another of their primal drives in nature. So we can get them off of eating and on to sex. I don't know. Anyway, let's go on and check into our next article before I get myself into even more trouble. Finally, this is an article about school nurses, and we talked about school nurses several different times here on the show in the past. We've interviewed a past president of the School Nurses Association, and there's an article coming out of South Carolina about a school nurse who inadvertently gave the wrong medication to a student when they came to see her. She gave a student who came to the office for an elementary school student came to the office for a stomach ache. Apparently, there were a line of students lined up to take their daily meds and a Ritalin. In this case, it was a Ritalin medication. And the student received a Ritalin pill and was sent back to the teacher. The nurse immediately realized what she had done, contacted administrators and parents. We did all the right things that she needed to do. But as I was reading this article, one of the things that was very alarming to me was that, heck, this nurse is giving out about 200 medications a day to students. That's a lot of patients to be given meds to in a shift, if you think about it in that time frame. And keeping all of that straight, as well as dealing with sick call, because you've got little kids that are sick and nosebleeds and everything else you got, you have to deal with all of that and keep everybody medicated and keep it straight. It seems to me that this is just another indication of where there is room for more nursing or more healthcare professional, perhaps, to assist the school nurse in monitoring the patients that come in for sick call. Then the nurse can be focusing on medications. But it's not uncommon. I mean, we know that medication errors are common enough in the facilities to be very alarming. And anywhere nurses are giving medications, there are risks for mismanagement of the medication in some way. And it's an honest mistake. It's an error that happens because of 8 million things going on, especially if you imagine a group of elementary school kids. This school system is looking at separating the areas where medications are taken from the areas where students go if they're sick. And so by doing that, just having a physical separation in the two areas can give the nurse some ability to control the chaos and not have the wrong kid get in line for meds when she's got all the meds lined up for the day. This is just one solution, and I think that it's at least as good as any others I've seen. But it talks about coming up with a plan. I think some of the differences here is, it seems like these school officials are being proactive. They're not going to be firing the nurse over this. It's an honest medication error. She's been an exemplary school nurse for the last 5 years. But it does point out that there are solutions out there. And hopefully, some of our facilities will see some of these things and be a little more proactive about dealing with their errors rather than, throwing out the baby with the bathwater when a nurse makes a mistake and not dealing with the underlying issues such as nurse staffing and other problems. So let's take a look at that. Of course, I'd love to hear back from you on this. Medication errors happen everywhere, and they can easily enough happen anywhere a nurse or any other healthcare professional is giving medications in an environment that's a little bit out of control or overstressed or when the nurse is overworked with a lot of patients to deal with. All of these cause the same kind of issues. If you want to comment back on this, send me an email, nursingshow@gmail.com, or comment on the show notes episode page for this particular episode. I'd love to hear back from you and hear your comments on what you think about this particular article or any of the news items covered in this episode. Time now for this week's tip of the week, and we're going to jump in and wrap up our very brief series on commonly prescribed medications. We've covered the medications that are most commonly prescribed by broad age group, from preschool children and infants up through school age children to adults into middle age, and then older adults we're going to finish up with today. And as you might have guessed, it might have something to do with cardiovascular care. In this case, the most commonly prescribed medication, according to this article I found at the CDC, is Lipitor, or actually any cholesterol-lowering medication is the most commonly prescribed medication for adults age 55 and older. So obviously we want to take a look at this medication. It's commonly prescribed. There are a whole series of side effects associated with it, things to be aware of, and some things we'll talk about with lowering cholesterol here in this tip segment. So let's go ahead and talk about commonly prescribed medications and our final list on the list here, cholesterol-lowering drugs. We're going to talk about a couple of things. First, we'll talk about what is cholesterol, types of cholesterol-lowering medications, the different medications specifically by type, some of the common precautions to keep in mind, side effects, and finally, nursing considerations. So what is cholesterol? Just I know you probably know this, but let's go over it. Cholesterol are lipoproteins. They are proteins and fatty molecules that are attached together, and they are water soluble because of the fact the way the proteins are structured around the fatty acids. And so these lipoproteins float through the body, and the body manufactures what they need from the available supply that comes in via food. There are two different kinds of cholesterol that you find. There's LDL and HDL. This is low-density lipoprotein or high-density lipoprotein. One's good, one's bad. How do you remember which? Well, I like to remember it this way. One starts with L for low, and one starts with H for high. So the one you want to keep low, the bad cholesterol, is the LDL, and the one that you want to keep high, the good cholesterol, is the HDL. So what kind of meds? When you have a patient that has an elevated LDL level, and patients are taking a medication to lower that, medications will lower that anywhere to 10 to 15% of wherever the lab value is. So not necessarily enough to bring it down below what would be considered safe and normal. And so this is always going to be coupled with other things like diet and exercise. But these meds are handed out quite frequently. Statins, which we've talked about here on the show before, also bile acid sequestrants, fibrates, niacin, the B vitamin, cholesterol absorption inhibitors, and omega-3 fatty acids, which are the fish oil pills, fatty acid pills that you see, omega-3s, help to reduce by increasing your HDL level. When the HDL level goes up, the LDL level goes down. And it's basically because when you see cholesterol floating through the body, low density is, it's not packed as full as it could be. And these are stickier. So they tend to stop and stick to the cell, the arterial walls, and cause that buildup of plaque over time. The HDL is fully attached, full of the lipoproteins it's carrying, and it gets back to the liver and is broken down and removed from the body. So this cholesterol is run through the body, the HDL is fully loaded, the LDL is not fully loaded, hence low density versus high density. The omega-3 fatty acids help to deal with that by increasing your HDL levels and giving you the good fatty acids that you need to have, and getting away from some of the bad fatty acids that you get in your diet. So what types of things are we talking about here? Let's talk about statins first. Statins, there's a whole list of them here. The best thing about the statin medications, they're easy to recognize. If you look at the end of the generic name, it says statin. So lovastatin, fluvastatin, atorvastatin, pravastatin, simvastatin, all of those are common cholesterol medications. You recognize names like Crestor, Lipitor, Pravacol, Zocor, all cholesterol-lowering meds by brand name. These medications will, again, work towards lowering your cholesterol, primarily by reducing the absorption of fatty acids in the body causing the fatty acids to be just pushed on through and voided at the other end of the system. This means that they could have some GI problems, and we'll talk about that and the side effects and the precautions, but it's something to keep in mind. Most of the medications that affect cholesterol work in this manner. Bile acid sequestrants, again, think about it. It's basically, this is working on the gallbladder, bile acid sequestrants include cholestipol, cholestyramine, sorry, it's hard to say that one. These are oral powders that you might find that get mixed up in a drink, and you drink it. Wellcol is another one that you might see. And bile acid sequestrants, basically, if you think about it, remember the bile helps to produce, helps to the body to break down and absorb fatty acids, the fats in the system. And by removing or sequestering and doing things to bind up that bile, we're able to prevent the absorption because we can't break down the acids as readily or break down the fats as readily. Niacin is nicotinic acid. It's a B vitamin. It's one of the reasons you're supposed to take your vitamins, folks. Also fibrates, and this is phenofibrate, which has numerous brand names associated with it, Gemfibrozil and fenofibric acid. So all of these, again, act by absorbing the fats and carrying them through the system that way. And finally, a couple of other things, cholesterol absorption inhibitors. This is Zetia and omega-3 fatty acids, also combination medications, and there are several different ones. Either generally, they are either niacin plus a statin, or in one case, I found the ezetimibe plus a statin, which is the Zetia, and that's the cholesterol absorption inhibitor. So these are all combination meds, and this would be Advocor, Simcor, or Vytorin are combination medications. And there are other combinations I've seen. There was a combination out there that's a statin plus an ACE inhibitor. So for those patients that have high blood pressure, if a person is got cardiovascular disease and high cholesterol, it's probably likely that they have high blood pressure. And so somebody got the idea to put those two together. So there are others out there to keep an eye on. Precautions, liver, kidney disease, this goes for many medications. Just you need to be very careful what you give to patients that have reduced or impaired liver function or kidney function. The liver is going to metabolize and help break down these medications, and the kidney is going to help excrete these medications and the byproducts of their metabolism. If you have to, if something slows down the processing on either of those locations, you're going to end up with a backup and a buildup of the med in the system to toxic levels if you're not careful about dosing and understanding that. So we need to keep track of that. Patients with gallbladder disorders, patients that basically are having problems producing the things they need to produce to get rid of the fats that are in their diet are going to be, needless to say, we don't want to necessarily remove all of the ability to absorb and process fats that come into the system. So it's important to make sure that we are monitoring patients that have gallbladder disorders, because they may not be, their dosing also may be changed. People are pregnant or nursing, talk with your providers that are prescribing the medication to you about whether you should stay on these medications when you're pregnant or nursing. And something to keep in mind. Blood thinners and GI bleeds, because of the way these medications work, affecting absorption and other things, they do have an effect on some aspects of the clotting cascade that happens. And so we need to make sure that there can be, if we're pushing things through the system a little bit faster, we could be causing additional GI bleed issues and causing problems with the things needed to close off and stop those GI bleeds as well. So we need to make sure we're monitoring patients for that. And patients taking any other cholesterol-lowering medication, they should not be doubling up necessarily if one seems to be working. So if you can only get 10 to 15% reduction from the cholesterol medications, it's not something that you can add together to get 100% at some point when you take all five medication types. It doesn't work that way. So you need to find a way to work in other things, and don't want to be doubling up on the medication. So good, careful medication history is always important with patients. Some of the common side effects, these are going to be easy to think about. First off, we're talking about a medication that affects the way the GI tract absorbs food, either by binding that food up, moving it through the system in a different way, getting it through a little bit faster. There's a couple of different ways that this all works. So needless to say, you're going to have a series of GI-related effects, and it might be gas or constipation, in some cases even diarrhea and nausea associated with some abdominal pain or discomfort. Also, think about heartburn, stomach pain, and also some reports of headache, dizziness, and in one case, changes in taste I saw. So that can happen with some other medications out there too. Patients may report changes in the way the things taste related to their meds. So be aware that that could come up, and as well as these other things. And patients can alleviate constipation, even diarrhea, by making sure they're getting plenty of fluids in their diet, so we can keep things moving along evenly. If they're more active, they're going to change the way their GI tract motates. The motility of their GI tract will be assisted by the mobility that they have, and so we want to make sure that we continue to encourage patients to be mobile. And you should just be aware that these are some common side effects out there. Since there's so many different kinds of medications, it's nothing wrong with telling a patient, go back to your prescriber, and maybe there's another medication that would work better for you if you're having side effects associated with the one you're taking. Some nursing considerations to keep in mind. Consider a dietary referral and education for patients, okay? You know, we can take a pill for everything that comes along, but better living through chemistry does not necessarily lead to better health for the patient all the time. They might be slightly better off taking a certain medication, but this medication will work best when coupled with diet and exercise. Patients that can do a whole lifestyle change associated with this will have a better opportunity to take care of whatever issue they have related to this. Also, educate the patients so they understand what the levels are. Help them understand HDL versus LDL, which one's the good, which one's the bad. Help them understand how to read when they get the, you know, the doctor says, here's what your levels are in your latest cholesterol test, blood test. Wouldn't you like to, they should have some understanding of that. We shouldn't be expecting our patients to just blindly accept whatever numbers we give them. We should give them the opportunity to educate themselves about what these numbers mean for them and how they work and what the numbers, what their target values are. Set goals and follow up. Diet, meds, and exercise. Help the patient set concrete goals. And then we need to be better about following up with these patients. And this is a perfect opportunity for nurses in a primary care practice, nurses associated with a clinic. This is a perfect opportunity for follow-up and education with the nurses that give them and give that patient the increased wellness focus that they need so that we can help them set goals and then follow up with them to see how they are meeting their goals. And by making a simple phone call to them, we can help talk them through some specific issues they might have. Perhaps some of their goals were unrealistic. Perhaps we need to help them reset some goals. Maybe they've reached a goal and it still hasn't brought their cholesterol down. We can do all these things. Also, just again, monitor kidney and liver function. Check your labs for that. And you know what? Family changes to lifestyle. We often have, you know, this person that's taking this cholesterol-lowering medication is not living in a vacuum. They are part of a family in many cases. We are not going to be able to change that person's lifestyle, eating habits, dietary constraints for what they like to eat and don't like to eat, unless we can actually focus on the patient and the whole family, getting the whole family to change lifestyle. The good news is we can get a family lifestyle change. We can actually improve the family's health overall and maybe prevent anyone else in the family from starting to take medications like this. So it's a good outlook and something to keep in mind that this patient in this situation, because so much of it is diet and lifestyle, we have to look at the big picture and their diet and lifestyle is affected by the people they live with. If we are going to expect them to change, we need to expect we're going to need to get their family to change as well. Again, go back to our earlier topic, set goals and follow up. And I think that's something we should be doing a much better job of. I think if we want a healthier population, helping the patient set a reasonable goal, following up with them, and then helping them set new goals until they reach the point where their target health is where they need to be for that particular item. Little bites, folks. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. If you tell a patient they got to lose 150 pounds, they're going to walk out and they're going to think, I'll never get started on that because it's just too much. Tell the patient they need to lose 10 pounds and how they can do it by parking at the far back of their office parking lot and walking an extra 10,000 steps every day might encourage them to make some of these little incremental changes. You know, go for a walk for 20 minutes every day at lunchtime after you eat something. Get that metabolism going. Add some steps. A little bit of exercise can make a huge difference for people. Resources, Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, lots of good government resources on this, Treating Cholesterol, a Guide for Adults, also the National Institutes of Health website and the National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute both have good resources, and I have the links in the show notes for these as well as some others, and I urge you to follow up on this and get the information straight that you need to get for this particular topic. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank you all for taking a look at the show this week or listening to the show. If you're catching the show on video on nursingshow.tv, you can, of course, catch it there. And, of course, the audio version is always out there available for you. However you're watching or listening to the show, I do want to thank you for checking it out. Don't forget to head over to nursingshow.com to get the additional resource information you need to continue to follow up on what we discuss here on the show. Remember, I can only go over so much. I don't know what your nurse practice standards are in your state, what you are required or not required to do. So you need to listen to my basic overview and then check the additional resources, check your local guidelines for and policies and standards for practice, and go ahead and use what are applying to you. That's your job. I can help you go and do a review on something. You need to take the next step and apply it responsibly to your scope of practice. I do want to remind you that you can get back in touch with me. Send those emails in to nursingshow@gmail.com. You can also contact me over at Facebook or Twitter under the handle PodMedic, facebook.com/PodMedic, twitter.com/PodMedic, and of course the Nursing Show fan page. Become a fan over at the Nursing Show fan page, and that's at facebook.com/nursingshow. We're going to go ahead and close out the show here with a brand new song that I actually found when I was down in Austin, Texas for South by Southwest. Those of you that follow me on Facebook and Twitter know I was down there. And I found this band, Henry and the Invisibles. Now, this is a song called Power of 10. It's a funk band. Those of you probably know I like a good funk band from time to time. And this Henry and the Invisibles is a one-man band. It was pretty amazing to watch him perform. And I was excited to contact him, and he wholeheartedly gave me permission to go ahead and share his song here on the show. I have a link in the show notes. Check out his music in iTunes, but you can also head over and find his Facebook page by just typing in Henry and the Invisibles. And I would urge you to do that. Let him know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis. I'm going to be back again soon with another episode. In the meantime, please remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Another definition sliding, open up a door. I see the system of life. I stop quick, I think about it twice, and I don't quit before I begin. I firmly believe in the powers of 10. Power, talking about a 10. I'm talking about power, talking about a 10. I'm talking about power, man, about a 10. Yeah, power, woo, about a 10.
Yeah.